Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Good afternoon and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I am Luke. Brian is off programming and improving all of the wonderful stations that you are hearing my voice on right now. Here in Madison, Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM. In Waukesha, on the Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM. In Wausau, Wisconsin, on Bull Falls Radio, that's 98.9 FM, 1230 AM. And in Wisconsin Rapids, on locally grown radio, that's 97.5 FM, 1320 AM. And folks, the phone lines are open, 844-967-2789, but something we are monitoring. I'm going to get into some more Wisconsin headlines, but up first, this afternoon, he was scheduled to speak at 2:30 Eastern Time, but he has just taken the podium in Washington, D.C. Attorney General Merrick Garland is giving a press conference on what I believe is going to give us some more details about the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago earlier this week. So, Evan, if you could so kindly take us over to what the Attorney General is briefing the public on.
Yeah, basically saying that I got rules to follow. I can't be telling you guys what this investigation is about. That's what he's saying right now.
All right, perfect. Let's go and hear the man live if we can.
Okay, sure.
Second, the department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken. Third, let me address recent unfounded attacks on the professionalism of the FBI and Justice Department agents and prosecutors. I will not stand by silently when their integrity is unfairly attacked. The men and women of the FBI and the Justice Department are dedicated, patriotic public servants. Every day, they protect the American people from violent crime, terrorism, and other threats to their safety while safeguarding our civil rights. They do so at great personal sacrifice and risk to themselves. I am honored to work alongside them. This is all I can say right now. More information will be made available in the appropriate way and at the appropriate time. Thank you. Thank you all for your questions. But as I said, this is all I can say at this time.
Wow. Yeah, he gone.
All right. So that was actually a pretty brief and not even taking questions. That it was Attorney General Merrick Garland essentially just briefing the crowd, briefing the press and the American public, letting everybody know that he is taking this job extremely serious and that he is not going to stand by silently if the integrity of the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice are smeared, saying, I cannot tell you any further because it's an open investigation. So
do we need more of these, right?
I don't think it should be necessary. Typically, this is the thing, Evan, is the standard practice for investigations through the Department of Justice is you do not comment on ongoing investigations. The Comey rule broke that.
Yeah.
Came out 11 days before the 2016 election, then leader of the FBI, and announced that they were reopening the investigation into one of the laptops for a staffer of Hillary Clinton. And it sent the election into chaos at that point. And so typically, that was not typical. That was a breaking of the norms. And Merrick Garland, if we've seen anything over the first 2 years of the Biden administration, is that Merrick Garland is a very judicious, very by-the-book attorney general. And so him believing that it was necessary to come out and
address the public and the press by saying, listen to these few things. I'm not going to comment on this ongoing investigation. We are doing everything by the book, and I will not stand silent while you question.
Yeah.
Even in, some people are saying that the FBI was there to plant evidence.
Yeah.
That is as far as some Republican and conservative pundits are going to try to throw confusion and chaos into what happened in Florida earlier this week.
And on the flip side of that, I mean, things are heating up. The rhetoric is heating up. Threats heating up. Today, an armed suspect tries to breach the FBI headquarters in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Like,
he was shooting.
Yeah.
He had a rifle and he was shooting in Cincinnati at the FBI visitor entrance.
So I kind of see why a man, even as judicious as Mr.
Feeling,
Garland.
I have a feeling that that shooting earlier today is probably what prompted this.
Sure.
But that shooting in Cincinnati today, I have not heard of victims. I believe everything was okay. I don't know.
That's what I've heard.
What
so far,
happened?
Yeah.
I don't have all the details yet for what was going on in Cincinnati earlier today. But that action in Cincinnati was prompted from right-wing talking points being disseminated across airwaves on cable news and pundits saying these unfoundedly that there was malfeasance by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
There's an armed standoff as we speak.
In Cincinnati still.
Yeah. Okay. The suspect is in plain view. Nobody's been hurt yet. The suspect has an undetermined injury of some kind. Yeah.
I had heard that the shooter had been grazed. So that is
wow.
Consistent with what I've heard so far, but I did not know that it was still ongoing. But right-wing rhetoric trying to throw shade on this FBI procedure that took place in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, which people have been calling Trump's residence. I think it's also important to point out he has it listed as a hotel for tax purposes. It is his business. He just happens to stay in one of the rooms there.
Remember when that was the scandal of the week, like 3 years ago?
He buried his ex-wife on one of the golf courses for tax benefits.
Not even on our radar. We haven't even joked about that one.
I don't even know how you joke about that. It's just upsetting. Like that is the...
I could see one of the guys making a joke.
Maybe, but Brian would probably have something, and I would probably chuckle at it.
But I'm guilty too.
Yeah, but it is depraving for the level. Like, those are not actions of a man that's a billionaire. I'm sorry, it's not, or a millionaire. Like, if you've got money, you're not burying your dead ex-wife on a golf course to try to get some tax benefits. You are trying to pinch every single penny that you can, because that's what this all comes down to. And honestly,
it's true spite. It's truly the worst type.
No. I think he just doesn't have any money, and he's trying. It's all a grift.
Okay,
he is a grifter.
Yeah.
He is in it for the grift, and he takes advantage of. He buried his ex-wife on his golf course for tax purposes. Like, I cannot stress this enough. That is like the lowest of the low.
And it's honestly
for
like
human
behavior. Haha, so crazy. The picture is kind of upsetting. I mean, to see this.
Yes, I agree.
I know what you mean.
So we go down on this tangent a little bit, but folks, we just wrapped up Merrick Garland speaking in Washington, D.C. at the Department of Justice, pretty much coming out saying that the department is not going to comment. You should not be. He does not want anybody throwing any doubt into the integrity and credibility of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That is where he is drawing the line, that he does not want to hear rumors or conspiracy theories that this was a false flag or planted evidence of the former president in Mar-a-Lago. Merrick Garland addressing the crowd. We'll get some of those sound bites for future shows, I believe, as well throughout the day. But that is what is going on at the U.S. Department of Justice today. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I've got no Brian today. He is off improving our signals, but I got Evan on the board and you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. At the bottom of the hour, I will be joined by Matt Rothschild of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. So going to have Matt on the show. Maybe we'll talk a little bit of the elections, what's going on. Sounds like Speaker Voss was already walking back some of the statements that he had made on election night and the following morning.
Oh, man.
Leading some to believe that maybe the Gableman charade would be coming to an end, but he's walking those back.
So I was hoping for an acrimonious split. Front page, you know, just in the...
Honestly, that's what he was riding so high. Like, yeah. I don't think he should have been. Like, it was not right.
Oh, no, he
so.
Should not have stepped in front of a camera that
it
night.
He eked out. He spent almost... The experts are saying that he spent almost $500,000 to protect his seat in that primary contest by Adam Steinstein, whatever it is. And so the Speaker of the Assembly, the most powerful elected Republican in the state of Wisconsin, had to spend $500,000 to fight off a primary challenger that he only eked out a victory by like 250, 260 votes.
He was trailing for like a good chunk of the night.
He was. Yeah, I'm sure he was sweating. And he got out the bottles of champagne afterwards. He was celebrating, popping champagne, just spraying it everywhere and laughing it up. But I think that right then was when he should have just fired Gableman. He was riding high. He called him an embarrassment to the state. He had a lot of fiery words for the special counsel that has been hired by Voss and the Assembly Republicans. We have to wait until next Tuesday for a caucus hearing. We're going to talk to Matt Rothschild a little bit more about that. But before we get to that point, I want to talk about a developing update today over at Wisconsin Public Radio. We got the headline, Milwaukee site selected to replace troubled Lincoln Hills youth prison. So we're going to be diving into that story a little bit more coming up in this next segment, as well as taking your phone calls, 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents. You're listening on Devil Radio, 92.7 in Madison, the Shaw 101 FM in Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, that's 98.9 FM, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, 97.5 FM. So we got some Wisconsin headlines we're going to get into, deciphering the Merrick Garland news and more. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. You can follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon. We've got Evan on the board, going to be joined shortly by Matt Rothschild of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and you on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. And Evan, as we were opening the show, we missed the start of the Merrick Garland press conference at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., and his first point was the breaking news point. And so we got to discover what that was as we went into that last commercial break. And I want to share it with the people because that is the newsworthy aspect.
Yeah, we got one clip here.
Yeah, we got one clip, and let's play it for the people, Evan.
Okay.
The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter.
Boom.
All right. So
that's why he mic dropped.
Everybody that was asking to see the receipts telling Merrick Garland, don't delete anything. If we take over Congress, we're going to come and investigate you. Everybody that had that kind of tone after the search of Mar-a-Lago on Monday is about to get to see what was actually in the request. And there was New York Times reporting earlier today as well that a subpoena for the documents was sent to Trump this past spring. So this was an escalation.
And that was in the news too. I remember that. Yeah.
And so he had been requested to return them. He acted like he had already returned all of the documents. There was a subpoena served. He didn't do that. And so the Department of Justice and the FBI had to go through the courts to get this search warrant authorized, Trump himself confirmed through a wild statement on Monday that this had happened. And so because of all of those events, now Merrick Garland is saying, well, fine, if the public's interested, and since the subject of the search, former President Donald Trump already confirmed that the search took place, which he did on Monday, then Merrick Garland is requesting the DOJ to unseal the sealed documents. And so we are about to get the receipts for what is happening with the Department of Justice recovering these illegally removed. I don't know how else you classify it. Like
stolen.
You want to try to give him the benefit of the doubt, but yeah, stolen documents. He left the White House with them. He was told not to take them.
Yeah.
He was asked for them multiple times in multiple different degrees to return the documents. And he has not done that.
And it's true. And so, a lot of this is going to be confirmed in the coming weeks, I imagine. You know, we don't know if this stuff was packed up for him. We don't know if he set stuff aside and hid it, you know, and walked out with it. We really don't know the circumstances under what this information was removed. But we know it was removed, and we know that he had it.
I would have
what? It was 12 boxes, right?
I believe it was a total of 25.
Okay.
And there was a total of 25. He gave 10 or 15 of them back, and so still had 10 or 15 of these boxes, is from my understanding of the reporting, is essentially what happened. He had taken a lot of the documents. He had given some of them back, but due to logs that the National Archives has, because all of this is tracked, there's a paper trail for all of it. Every single tweet, we're finding out from the January 6th committee that even a draft tweet of the president that does not actually get published on Twitter, but had suggested he was prepared to march to the Capitol on January 6th, that draft was saved, and it was saved with a stamp on it that the president had seen it.
Yeah, there's a reason why aides are so practiced at piecing together burnt scraps of paper.
That is how thorough the National Archives is at keeping a public record of everything a president has done.
Yep.
And Donald Trump, like the mobster he is, doesn't like the paper trail. And so he either had these documents printed out for him while he was president and then realized he couldn't delete them or destroy them in the White House, so he left with them. And to my understanding, I've listened to several different media sources on and some national security experts that had previously worked in the Obama White House. And essentially, when Obama was there, they were transitioning from printed off materials that the president would be briefed on to tablets and iPads and keeping secure, so not all of this would be printed off and being able to be removed in that nature. You'd have it on devices that you could then follow the chain of where the documents were on devices. So it's already an extra step for these documents to have been printed out. That is going beyond the norm when it comes to the way that this type of classified information can be taken out of the White House. And so there were extra steps taken by Trump's team for him to have these documents printed and then taking those printed documents down to Mar-a-Lago. I can't imagine that the Department of Justice and the National Archives is concerned. If these were the weather maps that Trump had drawn a Sharpie on, and he just wanted to take his art project home with him down to Mar-a-Lago and put it on the fridge down there, I don't think this search would have happened on Monday. This isn't some National Weather Service map that the National Archives is like, we need that back.
Didn't Trump himself strengthen these rules in results to buttery mails, buttery emails?
Mm-hmm. I got the joke.
Hey man, I gotta explain it every now and again for the benefit of the people. But didn't he make it like an intense felony to do exactly this?
Not an intense, but I think it's like subject to a year. Yeah. A year or two, I think, is potential and a fine. But the biggest thing that Trump made it a felony to remove classified information illegally, you're barred from public office in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I don't think the fine or the jail time are really what should be scaring the president, because say this little slip up of removing the paper trail illegally gets him barred from the ballot. Then that prevents him from being protected by presidential immunity ever again from being reelected.
Too sweet.
And so then maybe he should be a little bit more concerned about jail time for, I don't know, fomenting an insurrection? All right. We got Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign joining by me. We get to some Wisconsin headlines as well as this news breaking with Merrick Garland over at the DOJ. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. We'll be right back after this quick break. Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but that's okay because we got Evan on the board and we are joined here in studio in the Solidarity Realty Studios by an excellent guest, friend of the show, vigilante of good governance, Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. How are you doing today, Matt?
You guys are always mixing it up on me. Let me get your right mic on there, Matt.
Oh, Evan, come on, guest one. Let's see. Let's hear it now.
Hey,
there he is.
Thanks for having me on here. Glad you can hear me now. It's fun to be in studio. Live radio, it's nothing like it.
Nothing else like it. We've got a couple of different mics in here. So, you know, it's guests do tend to pop on different ones. So
it's
I won't fault. Yeah, I won't fault Evan for that. I should have yelled out which mic he was going to be on. But Matt, big primary results here in the state of Wisconsin. And before we dive into those, I'd love to hear your kind of first take on breaking news this afternoon of Merrick Garland requesting the records to be unsealed, because we didn't really get to see a copy of the search warrant or any of the document lists that was being sought by the Department of Justice on Monday.
So it was a fascinating but very brief announcement by Merrick Garland, and I'm glad he took the podium because there was just too much nonsense coming out from far-right Republicans and too much craziness among the far-right base for the Attorney General not to get up at the mic in public and say what's going on. So he told us what was going on briefly. One thing he added that I hadn't seen a lot of comment on was that Trump's lawyer actually was there. His personal lawyer was there. And I know a lot of folks like Jim Jordan and some of the other right-wing Republicans were saying, well, where was his lawyer? Why are you doing this when his lawyer wasn't there? Actually, the lawyer was there. And now they're asking, the Justice Department is asking a judge in Florida to unseal the search warrant. Now, I'm not sure whether a judge can do that without asking Trump or Trump's lawyer. Maybe the judge can, maybe the judge can't. But certainly if Trump wanted everybody to see what they were searching for, he could have released it already. But I think it's a smart move by Merrick Garland to ask this judge to unseal the search warrant and let everybody know, because the public has a tremendous interest in this and should know what's going on down there. I have another theory, and that is that Merrick Garland is getting close to the bigger indictments. I think this was the first shoe to drop, but it was just a slipper. You know, I think there's some real work boots about to drop on Donald Trump here.
Okay.
And so I think that's going to happen sooner as opposed to later, because Merrick Garland must have known that he was going to get this big storm of abuse from the far right as soon as they raided Mar-a-Lago. And I don't think he would have gone ahead and done that if he didn't have everything in sequence here about what's about to come down.
Right. It feels very much like this is the first domino in a probably very long set of dominoes that we're about to see tip, because I agree with you on that regard. Like, I believe that I would have to imagine that for this search on Monday to have occurred, all of the T's were crossed, all of the I's were dotted. This has been triple, quadruple checked. Like, this has got to be one of the most airtight search warrant requests that the Department of Justice has probably ever done, because it is against a former president of the United States. And there were a lot of calls on Monday about, oh, this doesn't happen in America. This is some banana republic crap. Very much similar to the echoes that Mike Gallagher, U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher, made on January 6th of the insurrection. But in regards to this raid, and everybody was saying, oh, if it could happen to a former president, it could happen to you. Matt, I don't believe for a second that if I left the White House with 15 boxes of classified information, that this is absolutely what should have happened to me, and it would have happened sooner Like, this is happening way later in the game than I think. Trump's been out of the office for 20 months now.
And that's the point. Nobody's above the law.
Yeah.
And if a president or former president is committing a crime, or there's evidence that he's committing a crime, yes, his place should be raided, just like yours and mine should have been raided. And you're right. They would have been raided a lot earlier.
A long time ago. Yeah.
But I'm reminded of what Mitch McConnell said when he gave a speech, when he voted against the second impeachment, even though his speech was written as though he was voting for impeachment. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, the former president could be held accountable in court.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening right now. So let's let this thing play out. But I do think that Merrick Garland's got other things he's going to drop here. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone ahead and raided Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is just that first step. So I think it's going to be very interesting. Moving on to other investigations, but it's a very nice, generous term for here in Wisconsin. We got almost some news on Tuesday night. It sounded like Robin Voss was ready to can Gableman.
I mean, it was sweet, wasn't it? Because Robin Voss said what we've been saying all along for a year now, that Michael Gableman is an embarrassment to the state of Wisconsin. And you got to know that Michael Gableman's allowance is about to be withdrawn. That after taking $1 million or more of our taxpayer money, his little allowance is going to be suspended probably next Tuesday or Wednesday after Voss meets with the caucus. Because Voss has made it clear that his patience with Michael Gableman is up, as it should
be. It's run out, yeah.
How ungrateful is Michael Gableman after getting paid $11,000 a month for a while and then $5,000 a month? And then he turns around and he runs against the guy who's been writing those checks to him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable what a buffoon Michael Gableman is. And, you know, Michael Gableman was there on Friday giving the invocation down in Waukesha when Trump was there, praising God Almighty for giving Trump so much wisdom. That's what the invocation said. I listened to it. I almost threw up on the spot.
That is, I did not know that Gableman was there. I did not tune in for Friday's special coverage.
Yeah, he was there and he was acting so pious, invoking the Lord's name and then thanking the Lord for bringing us Donald Trump and all Donald Trump's wisdom, which you could put in a thimble.
That is one heck of a weekend for Michael Gableman then, going and doing that on Friday, recording some robocalls for the Assembly Speaker's primary opponent, and then potentially going to that Toss Voss event that took place on Monday with scarecrows being flung across the field in Racine County. But he backed out of that one. And
but let's look at that race. I mean, Voss almost lost. He won by 260 votes against a guy nobody had ever heard of, mm-hmm. who had no money, who had no experience, who had no qualifications. All he had was Trump's endorsement that came the Friday before the election and then Gableman's endorsement.
Yeah.
And still he almost pulled it off. You know, that tells me that Trump still has his fist on the throat of Republican voters here. I mean, he still has Republican primary voters in thrall.
And I saw some headlines and takes after Tuesday's election saying, election deniers and that wing of the party, they lost. They struck out was one of the headlines over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I think that that's a pretty bad take on what happened on Tuesday, because sure, some of the candidates that were the farthest fringe did not win the races that they were. But in some cases, it's because more than one of them were running in those races and kind of split that Trump fringe party vote.
And also, they didn't have Trump coming to town saying, you know, don't vote for Robin Voss.
Right.
Voss is terrible, as Trump has been saying about Voss now for months and months.
Right.
So I think that's a very mistaken headline that we saw in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And rather, I think what we saw on Tuesday was that Trump still owns the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Otherwise, Rebecca Clayfish would have won.
Yeah, I was going to say his endorsed candidate, Tim Michaels, in the race won. And the GOP's primary around the attorney general race was one that if you piece that together, that should not have been as close as it was. But yet, Fond du Lac District Attorney Eric Toney only barely eked out a victory against Adam Jarkow. And had there not been another fringe candidate, I forget her name right off the top of my head. It's Kathleen something, I believe. But she was one of the attorneys that sued to overturn the 2020 election results. She was promoting ivermectin right there along with Senator Ron Johnson throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, saying that horse paste will cure COVID, which it doesn't, and doctors, and she, I believe, sued on behalf of a patient. She sued a doctor that would not prescribe ivermectin to the patient that was requesting it. And she received like 150,000 votes in the GOP attorney general primary. Adam Jarkow and that candidate got way more votes than Eric Toney did. And had there only been one fringe candidate in that race, a Trump-backed person would have received the nomination for the GOP for a attorney general.
Right. And Toney wasn't the endorsement endorsed by Trump. He called Trump dumb, which I kind of laughed at. But, you know, Toney's no hero here. Let's not fool ourselves. I mean, Toney is the guy who said the five of the six members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission should be prosecuted. So, you know, the Republicans have a problem here. They've wrapped themselves, other than Toney. I mean, Michaels has wrapped himself, you know, has been, you know, French kissing Donald Trump.
Did you see he removed Trump endorsed off of his website for all of like 15 minutes yesterday?
Until reporters caught it.
Yeah. I mean,
and so how is he going to separate himself from Trump here? He's not going to be able to. Toney Evers is already campaigning on this. And it's a real problem for Michaels. It helped Michaels win. It was a blessing during the primary. It's a curse during the general election because Trump's approval rating in Wisconsin is in the mid-30s.
Yeah, and I would say that Michaels is going to have his work cut out for him and trying to... I have pointed out before that the Glenn Youngkin path is the path that I thought Michaels was going to try to take. He was going to somewhat... he's already diverted from it a little bit, though, because... Youngkin wasn't in Virginia, wasn't as embracive of Trump. He was kind of touting it in secret before the primary and to get that Republican primary. But once the general came, he was very much like, oh, I'm a suburban dad. I am concerned about education issues because that was CRT was taking the country by storm when it came to that being the major talking point when Virginia had its election last November. And Youngkin won, barely beating out Terry McAuliffe. Do you believe that is something that Michaels could pull off here in Wisconsin? He's also not...
No, I think Michaels knew that the only way he was going to win is if he got Trump support.
Okay.
That's why we saw after Michaels' first racist commercials against immigrants, which were flagrantly racist, came the second commercial where he mentioned Trump's name about 10 times, and it opened with this huge truck with Trump's letters and... What, 1,000-point type, 2,000-point type? Huge letters of Trump. And all it was Donald Trump loves me, you should vote for me. And so how is he going to get away from that?
I don't know how he's going to try, though. I don't know how he's going to try, but my gut tells me that he is going to try to pivot to the middle. And we've already started to see it because last Friday, at that rally that you referenced, his number one priority was in election integrity. That was number one. And on Tuesday, during his victory speech, the economy and jobs all of a sudden became his number one priority. And I have a feeling, and Brian and I have described him kind of as a blank canvas, an empty suit, that you as a Wisconsin voter, you can project on Tim Michaels whatever your belief of who Tim Michaels is, rather than actually standing for anything himself. And so it's going to be an interesting... campaign to keep an eye on.
I do think he's an empty suit. I do think he's not a very agile empty suit at that. I know Crudy the other day on air was talking about what Michaels was saying on the stage when Trump asked him back on the stage, and I watched that video too. And Michaels just was flailing around. He didn't know what to say. He couldn't dance on his feet. I mean, you know, this is the big leagues now, and all the money in the world that he's got and that he's going to get from outside groups that are going to spend, and that Diane Hendrix's and the Richard Elines are going to spend in his favor. I still don't think can save his bacon on this.
Well, and did you see one of the first things his campaign announced after the victory? He changed. They were banning contributions above $500 because he was going to be nobody's candidate but yours. And then they win the Republican nomination for governor, and they quickly changed. Oh, we're going to accept individual contributions up to the legal maximum,
$20,000.
$20,000.
And he's going to be, you know, Diane Hendrix's candidate too. And she was there on Friday, and Trump saluted her and said how beautiful she was.
Oh,
I mean, it was a love fest.
One heck of a party on Friday.
A love fest. You missed it.
Oh, I'm glad I tuned it out. I went camping instead, and I can tell you that for peace of mind, much healthier than listening to that rally.
Oh, it was sickening to watch. Janelle Brandjian was saluted. Trump saluted her too. I mean, it was just a far right show.
Let's be careful what we say about her. If the Republican caucus all of a sudden, you know, wants a new leader, maybe she's going to be the one that picks up the mantle after Voss.
She may be, but she's going to lose her chairmanship of that elections committee, I think, on Tuesday also.
Well, maybe, maybe. If Voss has got the votes to be a fly in the on the wall in that caucus meeting, I think will be very interesting. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but joined by Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign here in studio, taking phone calls 844-967-2789. You are listening on Devil Radio 92.7 in Madison, The Shaw 101 FM in Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio 98.9 FM in Wausau, and locally grown radio 97.5 in Wisconsin Rapids. Got one more segment left in the day, plenty of time for your calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian this afternoon, but that's okay because we are joined by the vigilante of good government, and that is Matt Rothschild of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I saw, though, you had some workout on the results from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign's perspective, your thoughts on it through the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. So are there any other races from Tuesday?
Well, you know what worries me the most is the Secretary of State race, actually, at this point, because Amy Loudenbeck, who's the Republican nominee, Doug LaFollette's a Democratic nominee. Loudenbeck has eight times as much money as Doug LaFollette, and Doug LaFollette does not go out and raise money.
He doesn't, but I think that that last name has got to be worth a couple million dollars worth of political messaging in this state, because it seems like everybody referred to former President Donald Trump as Teflon Don. Like, we've almost got like a Teflon Doug here in Wisconsin, because the last name LaFollette, and Brian's joked, he's like, Luke, if you could just go change your name to LaFollette, like nothing else but LaFollette, just one name, like Prince or McLovin from Superbad. Brian's like, you could win whatever election you want. And I was like, yeah, probably, but
I mean, it is a name from God, but look at the Republican strategy here, their long game here, is to destroy the Wisconsin Elections Commission and give the power of the Wisconsin Elections Commission either to the legislature themselves, which they have under control because of gerrymandering, or to the Secretary of State if they can get a Republican in there. And that is what Amy Loudenbeck's trying to do. And since she's got eight times as much money right now, today, than Doug LaFollette has, you know, they're going to run a lot of ads. And I'm sure, you know, Diane Hendricks and Club for Growth and Richard Eline will be throwing some money to her, too. And so the question is, will Doug LaFollette be able to hold on? I mean, I agree he's got a head start because the name recognition, people have voted for him 20 times already.
But only 20? I feel like it would have been more than that.
But look, nothing is guaranteed here.
Right.
And a lot of elected officials have lost their last race because they were overconfident and didn't work hard enough. And I'm just saying, if Democrats lose that position and Republicans beat Evers, which I don't think is going to happen, but is possible.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is,
Then you know, the Republicans are going to be in control of not only running our elections, but certifying our elections.
Yeah, there's been a lot of debates going about with some pro-Democratic groups have been like putting money behind the Trump candidates in some of these primaries.
Yeah, I think that's crazy.
It is crazy, but everybody's talking strategy and stuff like that. But the fear and the argument and the side that I typically come down on is, well, if you do get that person in the general, there's still a chance for them to win. And so absolutely, here in the state of Wisconsin, there is a chance for Evers to lose, LaFollette to lose, and the Republicans to get a supermajority.
Josh Call to lose.
And Josh Call to lose. And so, like, there is some very high stakes on the ballot this fall. And unfortunately, democracy, I don't know if it's that sexy issue that gets people out to the polls. I don't know if Doug LaFollette is necessarily going to have that drive. So it's going to take every single race on that ballot to be able to, I think, get, like, a clean sweep that the Democrats did in 2018.
I mean, it may very well be that Evers and Mandela Barnes save Doug LaFollette, because I think Evers is going to make hay going against Michaels. I mean, Michaels doesn't even believe in abortion in cases of rape or incest. Can you believe that? And 3/4 of Wisconsinites don't agree with that position. And I think that's a killer position for Michaels. I don't think he's going to be able to win because of that position, on top of the fact that he's not really a Wisconsinite now. He's got a $17 million mansion in Connecticut where he's been living.
And a penthouse in New York City as well. So
I mean, he's not an average guy, and that's why Tony Evers and Mandela Barnes playing up the fact that they are like your next-door neighbor in Wisconsin mm-hmm. works so well, because they actually are.
Yeah, but my biggest fear is Ron Johnson's won twice before on not being that average Joe. He's a billionaire, right? Yeah, he's a billionaire.
I mean, he was running as, you know, average white guy in Wisconsin with his nice family in front of the lake and a beautiful fall day.
I saw the first ad. He's got his brother voicing it.
They were smart ads, too. I mean, let's give the guy credit. He beat Russ Feingold twice, which he shouldn't have been able to do, because Russ Feingold was a great senator.
Mm-hmm.
But now Ron Johnson has made a total fool of himself over the last 6 years, certainly, you know, with the craziness about COVID, with his co-conspiracy role in January 6th, with depriving people of insulin that is affordable, and now saying maybe we should just put Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block like everything else.
And Wisconsin has too many jobs. Yeah. Oshkosh Defense, don't build the next-gen postal vehicles here. We've already got too many jobs.
If Democrats can't beat Ron Johnson, they can't, you know, sell popcorn in a movie theater. I mean, yeah. It'd be a sad day.
I think it'll be very interesting to see that the pivots that we're going to get now, that the primary is behind us and we are all full steam ahead towards the general election this November. The shift in messaging, I think, is going to be really interesting to keep an eye on. And we got you filling in for the Devil's Advocates tomorrow, Matt. So.
Yeah, how do you like that? 4 to 6 tomorrow. I hope everyone tunes in. Francesca Hong, Representative Hong, is going to be with me in the 5 o'clock hour. Scott Ross, the great talker Scott Ross, is going to be on at the top of the show.
Evan, so you're going to have to be very close to that drop button then with Scott Ross. You know, you always got to keep it. Just an ear out for that one, but let's get you prepared up for filling in for the Devil's Advocates. Let's take a phone call here before this hour of Dueling Tangents comes to an end. We got Mark from Prairie to Sac joining us. Mark, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, well, you hit some of the points. I mean, we have to hammer these Republicans on the fact that part of their party platform that they've already, you know, come out and said, and their secret party platform, because they want to get rid of Social Security, and these guys, you know, like Matt was just saying, that they don't believe in having abortion access to rape victims, even, and who knows, you know, that what, how do they qualify for an abortion if their life is threatened by the pregnancy? We don't even know that, because they're so dogmatic in this, and they probably, you know, get them on the record that they probably likely oppose emergency contraception as well. They probably oppose contraception, even. I mean, that we have to hammer and just tie them all together. Tie this like a, you know, make tie this as a millstone around their necks, and make them pay. I mean, hoist them by their own petard.
I mean, Mark's absolutely right about this. I mean, Michaels said that 1849 law banning abortion in Wisconsin perfectly reflects his views, and there is no exception in there for rape or incest.
Yeah, I think it's very important. I don't necessarily believe punishing, I think, Mark, is the right term for it, but they need to own their positions. They can't walk these back now as saying Michael Gableman is an embarrassment to the state of Wisconsin. You got to own that then. And just like the policy positions that they take on all those number of issues, the economy,
but Michaels can't own
Medicare.
His abortion position and win. That's
right.
The problem he has.
Yeah. And, but he's out there on the record stating that. And so it's going to be a very interesting, what, we got 90 days from today.
He's also against gay marriage. I mean, this guy is far right. I mean, he may appear like, you know, I am a Main Street businessman. Of course, he inherited that job,
his
too.
Dad and uncle handed it to him. But also, he's kind of a loser. He lost in 04, and he lost in 98, right? He ran in a partisan primary.
Because he's
then.
A clumsy politician. He's not a gifted politician.
Right.
I think it would have been harder for Evers to beat Clayfish than it's going to be for Evers to beat Michaels.
I don't disagree with that sentiment. So, folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. No Brian this afternoon, but I very appreciate Matt Rothschild joining me here for the second portion of the show. If you missed any portion of it, you can go check out the podcast, devilradio927.com, or you can go to Apple and Spotify. Matt is going to be filling in for Dom and Crute tomorrow on the Devil's Advocates, 4 to 6 p.m. Be sure to tune in then. Otherwise, we got the Matt McNeil Show coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.